With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sandspants Radio, Australia's most procedurally generated podcast network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bookish. I'm George Dimrellis. This is a show where we ask you, what's your story and what does it say about you? Today on the show, I have a professional storyteller and fuckwit, John Bennett.
We agreed on professional fuckwit.
Yeah, look.
Yes, all right.
Look, I felt like I had to put in the other part as well so people got some framing of
yeah,
why you're on apart from your fuckwittery.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a big feature of you as well, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. These days.
It's a defining trait.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, like I said, just for people who would be interested,
yeah.
Storyteller, right? That's your big thing.
I say, yeah, performer, maker of shows, comedy, storytelling stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't want to get pigeonholing you. You know, that's
yeah.
True. I feel like you're a bit like, I'm an artist. Do not call me just. I'm not just the moth. I'm also many things.
Yeah, I do all the. But yeah, storytelling is what I'm sort of known for, I would say, maybe.
And a show about pretending everything is a cock.
Yes, called Pretending Things Are a Cock, which, yeah.
A weirdly super successful show, right?
Yeah. That's what I was saying last night as I was performing it off Broadway in, February 2020. And I was like, wow, New York City, off Broadway. This is my big hit, and I've made it. And then now I live in Adelaide.
I'm sorry.
With Travis, my friend. My friend since I was 6 years old. I live rent-free. And, yeah, that's my life now.
Yeah, that's a... Look.
But that's everyone's, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And,
we're not allowed to complain.
It'll be back, right?
Who's to say, you know? There's a reason why I've chosen like a post-apocalyptic type book for this.
It's going to reflect it straight away.
Yeah.
Okay, that's grim. Okay, actually, both options you wanted to go with.
Yeah, both. I love post-apocalyptic is my favorite genre of anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any reason?
I think ever since I was a kid, I liked the idea of like the end of the world, like survivors.
Yeah.
You know. Less and more like realistic versions, less zombies, you know. Come on,
yeah. Like,
we've done it, yeah. Less zombies, more realism,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like The Road, which is like the most you want to get depression or accentuate your depression already,
yeah.
Yeah, what read The Road?
No, I do, I have to read it. Like I said, Blood Meridian, and like the way he writes is just. So grim, like it's and just graphic and brutal.
Yeah, The Road is a very easy read because it's written in. Oh, I do. I'll mention my other favorite book later. I forgot my favorite book. I forgot what my actual favorite book is.
What's your actual favorite book?
It's called Boy Wonder. It's by a guy called James Robert Baker, and it's pretty great. It's not in print anymore. It's one of those hard to find, got to get it on eBay type. Books.
Really?
Because the author died after I think he only did 3 books. And he's an amazing, he died of AIDS in the early 80s, I think. And Boy Wonder is about a director of films. And the book is written in a style, like documentary style, like Talking Heads. So it's everyone in his life except for the guy who's the director. So you find out, and it's what's it known as like trash fiction. Or like, so it's gory, it's full of sex and violence and Okay. That sort of thing. It's like a more palatable American Psycho type thing, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
That's I've never heard of that book.
Yeah, no, not many people have.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a fave.
I think that's my favorite, but that's the first book I read as like more of an adult and went, "Oh, wow, this is a creative way to write a book."
Well, it's funny, like, because even the way you're saying, the way you describe those people telling the story of the guy from their mm-hmm. perspective without him being involved,
yeah,
obviously that does sound like it ties into you and your storytelling leanings, or obviously your art style, because you're probably actually let's take a step back for a second, because actually I'm curious. So, yeah, I agreed not wanting to be pigeonholed into just being some storyteller guy.
Right.
I get that. I get that. So I don't want to.
Well, we've got to choose our things.
I feel bad because I'm like. All you do is every day people be like, the guy from The Moth, and you're like, shut the fuck up.
Nah, it's fine. It could be worse. I don't know if you've ever talked to Heath Franklin. Chopper.
Yeah.
Yeah, and watch him. He's the only guy I've been walking to a show with, and there's been like a queue of hundreds of people outside his venue to see him, and he's gone, fuck. And just been like, fuck this. Fuck these people. And just, he's got to do Chopper. He has to. And so I feel his pain.
That is grim.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, a character would be definitely the worst. It's like mm-hmm. that's all you get forever.
And for such a funny man as well, like individually, not Chopper funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But just that's it. You just can't do anything else.
Yeah, I feel it.
Okay. But the point is, so yes, so while I say you might be known for some of the storytelling stuff, when you started, did you start doing that stuff? How'd you start with... What is your start?
I started doing like stand-up in Adelaide when I was at university. I was just turned 18 years old, entered Triple J Raw Comedy, didn't win, didn't come second, didn't come third, didn't whatever. And then I like telling this one because then a man called Zoran approached me after the show that I didn't win. And he said, if you want to keep doing this, I thought you were really good. I'll get you all the gigs and help you out. And he ran Raw Comedy in Adelaide and ran a bunch of venues. And
oh, really?
It was like, for a while, it was like pretty much a bunch of us sort of younger guys. And then the main headliners were Limo and Justin Hamilton.
All right.
And maybe even like Adam Hills was around that time as well, but he was sort of taking off. He might have been on like the local radio or something.
Mm.
But yeah, that was how I started.
That's sick. So he actually even though it didn't get through, that he just saw what you had and he's like, you got some skills.
Well, I guess. I did a thing like I had a tape recorder on stage with me, and every time I said a joke, I had a tape that was just me laughing, and I just press play and hold the mic down in front of the thing. And, you know, that's kind of unique now that I think about it. And I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
That is kind of funny.
Yeah, right? It's just bad, really bad stuff, but then with me laughing to cover
the thing.
So that's how I started doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved here to Melbourne. Here's how it happened.
Okay.
I was doing stand-up in the Comics Lounge here. I must have been like 25 years old. And I did this joke, and a guy came up afterwards, and he was like, really liked your set. Did you know that one of your jokes you do is this guy's joke? And it was someone who I'd seen, and I wrote it in the middle of the night. I must have sponged it.
Yep.
And I knew the guy, and I walked up and was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that I was doing your joke. And then he said, it's all right, you know, it's worded differently, it's obviously just something that you've done. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it anymore, obviously.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of like, then I had the electricity where I was like, well, if I can't be original, then what am I doing? So what is a way that I can stop that sponge happening? So I'll start, then they, like storytelling just sort of started happening. And I thought, if I tell real stories about real things that happened to me or people I know or anything like that, then there's no way that can be plagiarized. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I tell a story about, like, I got a story about, you know, being a little kid and falling into a dead cow carcass or whatever. And after I've told that story before, guys and people have come up to me and been like, I fell into a horse or, you know, this sort of thing. And it's wonderful. It's like, wow, we bond over that. So it's the way that I found to do comedy without and have it be truly original and unique.
Really? That's, yeah. I love it. Like, you're borderline traumatized by the one time you accidentally stole it.
That is how my brain works.
Just, mm-hmm. I'm never doing it again.
Yeah, that's how I do things. That is exactly
what
how
a response.
I haven't noticed this until like quite recently, which, you know, we should all be doing and getting therapy and stuff, where my therapist is like, wow, you really, any sort of thing you do, take it to the extreme. Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, I guess it worked out well.
It's that thing.
Full shift in your entire.
It is this
style
whole thing.
Performing
One time I ate a fresh tomato, I've spewed, and I've never eaten a tomato again. That's it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I hate them. Not only that, I don't. I'm afraid of eating fruits with seeds in them because I'm scared that the seed will touch my little punching bag in my throat and I'll spew. It's a real thing. It's a proper phobia. Some people have it.
I love it. I found it on the internet, right? It's fine.
Yeah. I've looked it up. There are other people with it. So that's the thing, right? There's too many elements in a fresh tomato.
Okay.
So skin, juice, smush, seeds, coldness or whatever. That's too many. If you take an element out, I can eat it. Sun-dried tomatoes? Fine. Love them. Tomato sauce, tomato, everything. Love it. Love tomato. Just the skin. Take away the juice out and then I'm fine.
Yeah. So it's just that one product of its own. Okay.
Too much. Too many elements for my taste.
You know what? That's you've won me over.
Yeah. I've never eaten an orange in my life.
An orange as well. No. Okay.
Too much. That's string, juice, smush. Skin, too much.
Pulp, it's, you're crazy.
Too much.
Yeah. It squirts, it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Can't do it. Dried orange, probably fine, you know.
If you've had it.
Take an element out and I'm good.
Yeah. Like I said, that actually sounds more reasonable than I expected.
Yeah, right? I can make everything logically work.
It's just you've spent so much time justifying it.
And that was the thing. Like, I did this guy's joke and I went, wow, I've done this. Well, what can I do? How do I solve this problem? And that's what I came up with. And that's how storytelling started.
Right.
Now everyone's fucking doing it.
Fucking, it's all over Netflix, all this shit.
Yeah,
bullshit.
All these guys, yeah.
Well, was it weird switching or have you always been kind of that kind of guy anyway?
No. And then so they started running, there was a storytelling night that this guy called Dan, who was a local poet here in Melbourne, started this show called Willow Tales. And then he asked me to help him run it and book. He wanted comedians, so he booked comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took it over and I became the, you know, that's how the comedy rooms and these things work. You start your own room.
Yeah.
You start your own thing. You do your own show.
Yeah.
You get to perform more. You get to do more stuff.
Yeah. You get to know everyone and all that stuff as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And then so my first storytelling thing, I set it up like I would comedy. I wrote a set list. And I went for 75 minutes and I'm in a 10-minute spot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that hyperbole?
Probably. Yeah.
Because I've seen comedians go a lot over, so that's why I'm prepared to believe it.
it
would have been like half an hour or something. Did you actually go a little, like, did you
get to the went for most of the night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Trainer.
But then I kept doing the thing, because I do this in stand-up as well, where I was like, do you want me to keep going or I can stop?
Yeah.
And they were like, no, keep going. And Dan, who didn't know, you know, there was no rules.
Yeah.
He's just started this thing. And he was like, no, keep doing it.
Okay.
So I just kept going.
Oh, yeah. What is these ultra-supportive moments you've had in your life? Right. Of
and I didn't know that, like, yeah, he didn't care and the audience didn't care. So there was no real
That's great then.
Thing. Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, but then you sort of learn and you're like, well. Because I didn't know how long my stories would take because I only had them as
dot points sort of things.
Dot points in my brain. So I didn't know how long one story would go for.
So you don't. And do you do like, so separate to that though, when you're hanging out, are you the kind of guy that sits there and tells tales, you know, those kind of friends or...
Yeah. With the right people.
Yeah, I'm not saying you train everyone on the planet.
Yeah, I don't do it to just anyone. But yeah, but that's how conversations work usually.
Yeah.
You share stories and stuff. Like, yeah. I've got a couple of mates who we go to a bar or something and then we'll go like, let's play the story game, which is where we give each other a theme of something and then we tell stories to each other until the theme runs out. So we just do that to each other.
Really?
Yeah, it's a fun way to do it.
And the story, like, you just make it up or it's got to be referencing life experience?
I think it's got to be true, yeah. It's got to be from your life, yeah.
See, that's so weird. My brain just does not operate in that in a way. It's really annoying. I just don't remember anything, like, thematically of stories like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I've got a terrible memory as well. But mine's, I guess, for more things. Like, you tell me, I won't tell you, I can't tell you what street we're on, you know. For festivals as well, it's really hard because, I mean, we all do this where it's like, someone will be talking to me and I'll be like, I don't know who the fuck you are. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, no, for me, I don't know. My connection point, I don't know, I've never been that big storytelling sort of person in a way. I love them, but.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, you train your brain that way.
Yeah, I think that's part of it.
So it's after doing it for so long. So even now, I'm like, I forget people. And now I could tell you a story about forgetting someone or two or three, you know, and my brain is at the moment being like, yeah.
Remember this time, like that.
Yeah. One time I did like 10 shows in a festival during the Falls Festival, which is a whole different thing.
The Falls Festival? The
music festival, yeah. Like, I've done that a bunch of times. Yeah. Where all the like teenagers go and, you know, they want to see the show pretending things are a cock, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine they're very attentive.
Oh, I did it not last year, the year before in Tassie, and whoa, there were so many like young kids off their heads. But my tech for it, at the end of the show, I'm like, thanks, Dave, for doing tech. Everyone give him a round of applause. And after 10 shows, he was like, you know, my name's not Dave. And I was like, sorry, what is your name? His name's John. Well, I mean, my name's John. It's your name. I told you it many times, but you kept calling me Dave this whole time. And my name is the same as yours.
It's a full thing. It's like, hey, you and me, we've got the same name.
Yeah. And he just never corrected me.
Yeah, that seems rough. Yeah. Wait until the end for that.
Yeah.
Okay. Funny, so there you go. You're ready to go with the story.
Exactly.
Damn it,
all
good.
The time.
You are good, man.
Yeah.
Well, because that's the other thing about like, I had another a writer on recently, and he did a bunch of short stories. Mm. He wrote in a collection. Actually, it's called "Today I Fucked Up," where he got people to tell their most embarrassing
fuck up
story they've ever done. And he released it in a book. It's really good. And we'll talk about storytelling and like that kind of thing. And it's funny because I feel like everyone starts off with like really obvious big stories,
mm-hmm.
but then as they get better, because we're comparing, you know, David Sedaris.
Yeah,
yeah. So like, I was comparing it to him. It's like I feel like he's gotten more and more. Like nothing in his stories almost. Like, it's just like, I feel like that's what happens as you develop more and more. It just becomes like you went and got milk. Somehow that's thematically resonant and deep and it's saying something about the human condition, I guess.
Also, he's a pretty amazing character just in himself. You know, he's a little bit Hunter S. Thompson-ish sort of, you know what I mean? Like,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my best reviews has been compared to this is only for this literature thing. A combination of David Sedaris and Bill Bryson. Is that a good one? I don't know. I've never read Bill Bryson, but I have read David Sedaris.
Do you know Bill Bryson though?
Does he do Australian stuff or something?
He does like every. He did a short history of nearly everything.
Yeah,
and like A Walk in the Woods, which is an American. He's American or English, I think.
But he does do a book about Australia, right?
He's got travel logs of different countries and stuff as well. Like countries walking and then science stuff. And
yeah.
That's a good combo.
That's a good one. I should put that on stuff then, right?
No one's going to get it, obviously.
I have not used that ever. I have not put that on any sort of.
See, why don't you tell me this one I did in introduction?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the perfect audience for it.
David Sedaris and Bill Bryson.
Yeah. He's been called before.
Yeah,
He prefers to go by fuckwit, though.
Yeah, just call me a fuckhead. I prefer that a lot more.
That's a good claim to fame, honestly. But yeah, no, that's, I mean, okay. I guess we should probably start on the book part of this.
Oh, fuck,
you haven't mentioned it. So your book of choice for today?
It was Why the Last Man, the series, the graphic novel series by Brian K. Vaughan, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that right, yeah.
I think someone else is the
illustrator. Yeah, illustrator. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
How terrible. No, we don't remember the artist.
That is criminal. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is a why? Why is it your favorite?
I think because I like, as I was saying before, my favorite sort of genre is post-apocalyptic thing. And for those people who don't know why The Last Man, the plot of it is, it's a bit of a twist on it. A disease goes around the world and all the men die. And mm-hmm. so it's left as a world of women. And it's quite interesting because they go into the realities of that, which is the sort of post-apocalyptic thing that I like, is the reality that happens. So no zombies, but like half or more than half the plumbers die. The pilots die. I think the Minister for Agriculture becomes President of the United States because she's the highest ranked. And so that makes you go like, whoa, you know, and especially at this time that we're at right now where, you know, you realize how dominant men have been and, you know, how deep misogyny runs through history and all of this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it did. It did do a good job of like, the political aspects, the different ways people take it as well.
Right.
Like different groups, how they splinter off. And
yeah. And the radicals who are like, this happened for a reason. And, you know, they want to. And of course, there's one man who survives and he's the worst. Like, he's not a good. It's not. He's not the hero. He's a fucking magician. And I won't give away the end, but you find out the way he survived and it's just like, ah. Oh. So stupid. And like,
I forgot about that.
he's such a fuckhead in it as well. Like, he's like, oh, I want to go to Australia. And he's an American. He's like, I got to get to Australia. And he's like, this is the end of the world, mate. Such a frustrating character. And I like that he's just a normal idiot.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. It doesn't actually cast him as some savior or anything
He needs people to save him all the time because he does stupid masculine acts, you know, like he'll try and fight someone and they're like, don't fight someone, you fucking idiot man. And that's sort of, especially for now, I feel like we're all realizing a bit that men are all, you know, yeah, I'm going to say it, all men are a bit fucking stupid and are idiots.
Yeah.
Clouded with self-importance and
at least 80% of the time.
Right, because we've held all these high position power.
Yeah.
And you're just like, ugh. It's like, what did I read the other day that someone was like, oh, yeah, who are you going to vote for in the next election? I might vote for the party that doesn't jizz on desks. You know, that's the thing. Now we're realizing that all our politicians are just fucking idiots.
Going to be closer than...
Does me in.
Well, that I feel like is more an indictment of our brutally rigged media system in Australia compared to everywhere else. Basically, everywhere else in the world, we have like the worst media in terms of utterly owned by
a massive right-wing. By a massive fuckhead. Yeah,
there's not even split out a little bit. It's like there's no centrist here. It's
It's so that stuff is very interesting. Of like, even like, what was it, daylight savings finished yesterday?
Yeah,
and I'm like, why are we doing this still? And then I was doing it on my friend who was driving me to the airport. She was like, so you want to end daylight savings? I was like, yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand. It's for farmers. I'm like, just keep it light outside for a bit longer, you know, in the afternoon. No one needs the mornings anymore. And then she's like, well, how would you stop? And I think I said something like, if I ran for parliament or something, that would be my thing, is to end daylight savings.
But you want to end it the wrong way. You just want to shift it back an hour and leave it there.
No, I want it to be light for later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, that's, so naturally it's actually earlier, so they switch it to make it light later for a little
bit. Is it naturally? What's time, George? Is it?
Damn it. You've right? really got
what
me there.
What is time? Who is the person who said, we need this amount of hours? Let's change that. And then I was talking to my friend and she's like, all right, so what you'd have to do is you'd have to start a petition. What do you call it?
Petition.
Petition, get 1,000 signatures, post that into, you know, parliament and, you know, then have it get passed as this sort of thing. And I was like, oh, I'm already
tired and I can't be fucked. But that's how hard it is to create any kind of change, even for the stupidest of things, like daylight savings.
Like getting 1,000 signatures is such a small step on the journey.
I can't even do that.
And you're like, oh my
God.
I'm out
at step one.
You're like, this is what you have to do just to do this. It's like, you have to do way more just for this.
No, I'm out.
If you want to change daylight savings, there's a lot more than just getting 1,000 signatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too hard.
But daylight savings is like, as in, honestly, you're a comedian. You live the comedian lifestyle. So what time do you wake up in the morning?
These days, yeah. I've been waking up at 9:30.
And see, your tone of voice suggests that is like...
Sometimes it's 11, 12.
This is 9:30 is like, I am killing it.
Yeah.
I'm waking up early. I'm a functioning member of society.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Festival times, it's like, yeah, midday.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like you might be biased in your views of when the sun goes up and down.
My understanding is that daylight savings is for farmers.
No, the farmers want to keep it. They don't want to change it.
Right.
So what is daylight savings is for everyone else who wants? I might be wrong, but from what I understand, daylight savings is purely for everyone who lives in the city and stuff and wants to have more sun at night.
Yeah.
So during summer, when that's the case and they can really take advantage, they switch it, give you an extra hour at night. But then when it goes back to winter, because the sun's coming up so late now, they're like, we'll give you some morning sun because otherwise people go on to work in the dark.
Sure. Go to work in the dark. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but we've invented a thing called lights, electricity. We've got lights now. Farmers can reap their crops in the dark. Right? I love that we've gotten onto this.
You've really stuck on the farmers part of this.
Bloody farmers.
I know.
I grew up on a farm. I know this.
It feels like you're against the farmers rather than savings.
You
stick it to them.
You know, the worst part of growing up on a farm was all the work I had to do. So I'm done with it.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that
anymore.
If
it was dark, I could run away and hide.
Yeah, I would just get up at 9. What's the difference?
What's time?
Right, what's time?
Yeah, look, you haven't won me over, but you gave it a good shot. Yeah. Should we go? Yeah, go back to the book, I guess.
Why the Last Man, yes.
Why? Because the part that's interesting when you're saying that, which I hadn't thought about. So would you, because I haven't seen, whenever I see you do stuff on stage, I don't see any sort of political, but I haven't seen that much of what you do. So maybe.
No, I don't.
I feel like it was more like a human thing rather than any sort of leaning, but.
Yeah. My latest show is slightly social justice-y, but it's called Playing with Men, and it does go into why we're a bit fucked right now and how we need to take responsibility for our behaviors and our learned behaviors and unlearning that stuff, and all through the guise of playing football.
Right.
Because I thought I was going to be an AFL footballer.
Really?
A teenager. Yeah, I played state football. People are always surprised by this.
Well, you just
I was a really good footballer. And all these prejudices are there. So I talk about that in this show as well, like growing up as a teenager playing sport and having like two players on my football team, their nickname was the N-word.
And two.
Two. Wow. So one wasn't enough. We'll have another one. And it's like... So we all have this internalized racism, and that was fine. That was fine at that time.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about it. And now when I go back and think about my history of playing sports, I realize in the show, I realize how like I was brought up to be violent, aggressive, racist, misogynist. I was brought up this way.
Yeah.
And now we're all realizing that, holy fuck, this is terrible. Let's change this. Yeah.
Right. So do you reckon... Because the view I think a lot of people have, and I mean, I had the same experience when I was in school. I had a kid. He wasn't even like, he was like half Sri Lankan. So he wasn't actually like African, but he got the nickname, and he wasn't Aboriginal.
Yeah.
He got the nickname Coon.
Yep.
Which I think I can say that. I have to say
C. I don't know. I don't say any of it.
You don't say no. I think I can say that. I think it's okay. It was like the cheese, Coon cheese, you would say. So yeah. But he gave himself that nickname. I don't know if he gave himself that, but we all called him that. And I didn't even know it was a slur. Until like 10 years later, I was like, oh, that was a slur we were calling him. And I didn't even know. Like,
yeah. We had a guy whose last name was Abbott. Not Tony. But his nickname was ABO.
Mm.
That's what we called him, which is a slur, right?
And I guess this is where I'm wondering your view, because even the people we call the N-word, you would probably argue like that there wasn't ill will towards them for that, if you know what I mean.
No,
the
but
defensive position, there are people who like, they don't care. They love saying it. They give us the same back.
Yeah, that's what I bring up in the show as well, which is just like, but you can, just because it's steeped in what you used to do, fucking change your mind. Stop saying it. What help are you doing by arguing this bullshit of like, oh, they'd call me it, and you know, whatever. It's not, it should be so simple that it's, you shouldn't use that term. Who are you helping by using it? No one.
Yeah.
Stop it.
I mean, like, I can understand, like, elements of it for the older people who, because literally it was a different time. So if they grew up, it was fine. And now it's changed. And that can be confusing for people because they're like, I don't mean ill will in it. But, like, you know, it's how people treat it differently. So I can't understand that. But the thing that I've always found, and this is where I do to go back, though, like, I got parents who are definitely backwards and they ain't changing.
I mean, we all do, I would say.
Yeah. But I feel like they would at least, they wouldn't kick someone out for being different, though. You know what I mean? Like, they're not that extreme where, like, if someone came in and was gay or whatever, they wouldn't actually, they might be upset because of their old school values, but I think ultimately they would actually be accepting as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that I think is okay.
I think most people are that. I had a thing with my parents because this great thing where all us comedians are now having to spend lots of time with our parents and our families.
There's going
to
be a lot of parent shows.
Yeah. But just,
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I just said what's the thing that what the ethos that I go by is just no harm. So if you do something or say something or whatever, and then it causes someone harm, you think about that and you try to cause no harm to them. So if someone is like, you call me this, it upsets me, say sorry and don't call them that again because you caused them harm. Is it causing you harm to say it? No. And you've made a very understandable mistake, you know, like that. And so I do that as well. And like, I will accidentally misgender people or whatever.
Yeah.
I hate and then when they say something, I'm like, oh fuck, shit, sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I will try and stop doing that.
Mm.
And slowly it's working. Slowly.
Mm.
I really struggle with saying guys all the time. Everyone's guys.
But I think because guys.
It's a fine line. That's a real little tweak there.
I know. It's so annoying because guys, I use it for everyone. I'm just like, hey guys. And then it's guys and girls. But it's like, I don't know how to.
Yeah. That's a real tough one to get out of to unlearn that thing.
Is it okay if you just call everyone guys?
Well maybe. But if someone is like, please stop calling people guys, I'll be like, all right.
You're so at the mercy of...
Yeah, this is the similar thing to like... It's exactly extremist. Yeah, it's exactly why I stopped doing the stand-up and did storytelling is because one person one time said, you did this, and I was like, well, I'm done everything. I'm finished.
I feel like you're doing well, but have now just completely lost all credibility.
Yeah. So, yep, that's how...
Become a nervous wreck instead.
Yeah, it is that. It's really affecting my mental health. I don't want to. Don't want to cause harm to anyone.
It's interesting. Just to throw it out there, that mentality and the way you're doing that. It's funny because that actually does slot perfectly in with dystopian fiction.
Yeah.
Why Last Man? Because those are probably of all fiction the most universally extreme. Like as a genre, it's humans at the most extreme. It's the situations at the most intense. Automatically, like as in, it's the end of the world. You're going to see shit at its most intense.
And I guess,
like, it's interesting that you're like that yourself in reaction to things.
Yeah, that's the end.
Genre is like that kind of thing, because it's always like, yeah, pushing people to the limit. That's what you get with survival.
And you see the turn in the societal turn in certain cultural groups and that sort of thing. Like in Why the Last Man, like we said, some of the groups of women think it was from God.
Mm.
And then they go into this Amazonian thing and they cut off one of their breasts and you go around causing havoc. And then you've got like the science-based people who are trying to work it out. And then you've got that. There's a group of a women's prison, which is crazy. There's they go into a town and it's all the ex-criminals from the women's prison and they're the most together group. They're the most functional, like, town, because they've been living this way for ages. And so they just decide to stay together, and the man shows up and they're like quite nice to him and, you know, help him on his journey and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah,
which is fascinating.
But that's what I was wondering. So your political because again, you're liking to how to unpack that side of the Why the Last Man, seeing how like that stuff, and that's dystopian again
in general.
But you don't weave it into many stories until recently with this one. Was that an intentional choice?
I mean, I do a show about my brother going to jail for drugs. So that has a bit of a political side of it as well, which is a bit like, you know, the prison system and addiction and how we criminalize addicts and, you know, that sort of thing. So they all end, or a lot of them end on a sort of social justice-y type.
Yeah.
Meaning. So, like, you know, I think at the end of the Fire in the Meth Lab show, which, you know, you can watch on YouTube.
The full show's on YouTube.
Which is free. I just put them all up.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay. Fire in the Meth Lab.
Yep.
All right.
That has, like, 50% of people in all jails are non-violent drug addicts.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. That's insane. And we just lock them away. We put no effort into rehabilitation. None of this, just chuck them away. And
it's going to be one of the big things, I think, in like 10, 20 years, hopefully. They'll look back and be like, that was crazy.
Well, once we can especially fix daylight savings, then we'll get into the justice system.
I feel like the justice system might be easier than daylight savings. You're going deep.
Yeah, yeah.
You've seen how much it cooks everyone daylight savings. Yeah. It's way too powerful. Okay. Well, it's funny you're saying that, because, like, I guess – I'm just thinking now of other storytellers, I guess, even like David Sedaris, like we mentioned. And if you're telling stories which involve appreciating another point of view, you're probably going to end up having social justice-y leanings in a way. You're approaching it from the point of view that, you know, everyone's human and everyone's not perfect. And, you know, we are all victims of circumstances as much as our nature.
Yeah, and our history and our culture. And we're all just trying. Just trying to get along. And that's why ignorance is very frustrating, because they're not trying.
They've stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've gone, no, I'm good.
Right?
It does seem like a bold position.
It's just people who can do that, I'm almost like jealous of. I'm like, wow, you're going to stand by that. Oh, okay. Cool, I guess.
But I mean... everyone has those blocks though, right?
Right.
We all do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do.
Because none of those people are aware that they're doing that, right? None of them think
that. Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Ignorance. Because I do it as well. Like, even with all the Trump stuff, when all that was happening, and here I'd watch him say something, and then there's a bit in my brain that's like, maybe he's right. You know, I try and go on both sides and be like, I don't know. Who am I? I'm a fuckhead.
Yeah.
I don't know anything. Maybe he's right. I don't know. Anyone who's confident, I'm won over by. I'm just like, oh, all right. I guess he's got a point. I can be influenced so easily. I don't believe it.
I don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah. I don't know anything.
What are you saying? I'm just going with.
Who am I? I'm an idiot.
It's about the Okay, well, that's surely not completely true.
Pretty much.
Oh, no. So let's try it. Let's get a bit more of your history. I'm just trying to tie stuff together here.
Yep.
Because you grew up, like you said, Adelaide, country boy, farming.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? And then you moved to the big smoke of Adelaide City.
Adelaide and went to uni.
And went to uni?
Yep.
What did you study?
I studied the beautiful degree of communications, which is a joke on The Simpsons. Well, they're like, I think it's Dr. Hibbert or whatever is like, don't worry, you can always fall back on your degree in communications. I is doomed. So I went to uni and studied like film production and media and all the stuff that doesn't get you a job anywhere.
But was it fun?
Yeah, you just watch movies and analyzed it and did all of that. And a lot of people, when I, because I run storytelling workshops and stuff like that, and I don't write anything down. I don't write my shows or my stories down.
Ever?
No, I use like a storyboard from a film. So I use projection and PowerPoint. And so the pictures represent a story and that's how I frame things.
Are you talking about
things?
Just whenever you're writing a show, that's how you do it?
Yeah. It's all done with pictures.
So you don't write word for word stuff and get... Really?
I'll have maybe a word, like maybe like, you know, okay. a dead cow for the dead cow story.
Yeah.
I've got the names of them, but I don't write them down. So it's more authentic if it's just coming out of your brain, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, firstly, I'm guessing, well, I've heard you, it always ends up being the same once you've done it a few times.
Yeah.
But so do you just like get up on stage and talk and then you then remember what? Do you record your sets and then go back and listen to them?
No.
Are you serious?
I haven't even watched the YouTube clips. I've put them on there, but I don't want to watch myself. I hate it. I can't do that.
Oh, so you're just like a fucking genius.
I did.
You're an annoying bastard.
I did Perth last year, not last year, the year before, Perth Festival, and I did a show just called The Nominee, and what it was is like, so I have 9-hour-long shows. And what I would do is the audience nominates which show they would like to see on the day. And I just load it up into my computer and off we go. And we just do that show. And I just thought that was normal. Like I didn't think that was that big of a thing until, you know, one of the sort of more neurotic comedians is like, what the fuck are you doing? That's insane. But your muscle memory is pretty good, especially visually, if that's how you do it.
So what? Because you have slides up behind you, and then you talk, and while the slides are there,
yeah.
So you just got to remember. So I guess the shock is that you've got 9 hours of content technically.
Yeah,
remember word for word almost.
To do it within like the first minute of the show, and just be like, okay, I guess we're doing How I Learned to Hug. Here we go.
And you just do a full hour show.
Yeah,
that's pretty wild.
Yeah, I didn't think it was. I thought it was just a thing.
The fact that it's 9 different 1 hour shows
just bouncing around in my brain.
Yeah. So like, yeah. So. You have nothing to teach anyone. You're a full freak.
They can write them down. That's not. I don't teach them to not write it down. I just tell them that's the way I do it.
Yeah. So do you find yourself editing much?
No. Well, editing the show?
Yeah. Like, as in, you get up for tonight, you've got a new story you want to tell. You get up, you tell it, and then do you go away? And you might not write it, you might not listen to it again, but do you then get up and say it roughly the same, or do you do some pretty significant
changes?
Oh, no,
I'll edit it and put tags on and put jokes in and all of that.
But not from writing, just in your head?
Just in my head, yeah.
Like, do you just sit there?
I don't know. I think I just... So, for example, I just do it as much as possible. So, for example, Adelaide just gone, Adelaide Fringe... I did 4 different shows for the whole Fringe. So I ended up doing 60 performances in like 26 days or whatever.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, as in on the same day you did like 2 or 3 shows?
I did 2 shows in a row for most nights. Yeah. Yeah. And so the more you do it, the more.
But was that experience material or was that trying stuff?
That was a bit of both. So I did like stand-up spots and that sort of stuff, which I would change around and do whatever and. Came up with some COVID material because you got to do relatable stuff, whatever. And, but then, you know, if I get stuck, I've always got something to go back to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although you must struggle with like, because you've generally got longer bits, right?
So, yeah.
So if someone's like, oh, you've only got 3 minutes left, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, I'm done for. Yeah. I can do, but I've got for stand up bits, I've got like 3 minutes. You know,
right.
I've got, jokes and whatever.
Right.
Yeah, because it's quite funny that here's some news. I got contacted by America's Got Talent 3 weeks ago, and they were like, we want you to do the opening to this show that I do. It's online, How I Learned to Hug. We want you to do the opening to that, but it has to be 3 minutes long. And I was like, that bit goes for like 8 minutes. I don't know how I can cut that down.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to do that. It won't make any sense if it's 3 minutes.
It sounds super short because it's not
right.
Like your story, like I haven't heard that one, I don't think, but your stories are relatively dense already.
Yeah.
So you can't really
And I speak very fast.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
That's, I mean, compliment to them reaching out to you. Like that's a.
Who knows? I don't know what's happening with that now.
How did they even hear about you? We haven't gone into this. What was life? You know, it's tragic if you now to think back on it, but New York living. And yeah. Like, were you just living there? Did you move around America to do stuff everywhere?
I was touring around all over the place because I do a lot of stuff for the Moth storytelling. And so they sort of take you to, you do shows in the major cities and that sort of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, they're great.
How many of you, is like a set group of 5 or 10 people that go get flown around or?
Well, they choose a theme. And then if your story fits the theme, then they pick people from that. And luckily, my story fits into a lot of themes, and it's the perfect middle story. As in, it's a bit funny, it's a bit nice, it's a bit sad, it fits all the categories.
This is just one story?
Just one story.
Which one?
It's from my dad's deaths, and it's a story about going hunting with my dad.
I've heard that one.
Yeah.
At the Kangaroo Island.
Yeah, you've heard it tons. I did it for your show.
Yeah.
So I do that one for the Moth.
All right, so they don't actually do lots of different stories, you just do the same one.
I've got another, I've done it a bunch of them,
yeah.
But they mainly want the hunting story.
Is it because that's like, they just think that's perfect?
Yeah, because it's got like highs and lows and it's bookended and it's, you know.
It's tight.
Yeah. So, I do a lot of their stuff.
And also, if they fly somewhere for just the night or like a couple of nights or?
It all depends. Sometimes I'm just like, well, I'm going here anyway. I'll just stay.
Yeah.
Because I've been nomadic for the last 9 years.
Wow.
And just go wherever I go.
So, like, does that mean – so you just get it, like, you stay in an Airbnb or something and
– Yeah, they usually put you up for at least, like, a few days. And now because I've been sort of nomadic for this amount of time and the beauty of social media – so, for example, I did the Moth in Boston and I was like, I've never been to Boston, I'll stay in town for a while and then I will write to my performer friends or post on social media. Anyone know anyone in Boston? Can I do some gigs? Anyone got a bed that I can stay in or a couch? And so I stay with friends of friends or that sort of thing. The great one in Boston, which is a couple of years ago now, is actually Dan Allerman, who's a comic here in Melbourne. He was in Boston, so we hung out a bit. But then after the Moth show, which is in a huge, beautiful theater, you know, you do your show to 3,000 people. Yeah. And
you have to do anything.
You can't. It's impossible to bomb. You just will kill it every time.
Oh, but also, like, I mean, in terms of marketing, you're just rocking up.
No, you just show up.
To just show up and perform to 3,000 people.
Show up and do it. And sick. But this is kind of not terrible. But, like, so after the show, Dan came and he was like, wow, it's... what a show. And, you know, I think Obama's speechwriter was on it and, you know, all these different amazing people. And then we had the after party and Dan was like, you know, there's this group of people who are waiting to talk to you, and which is can be good or bad. And so I was like, I don't want to talk to them. Like, I'm embarrassed and whatever. And then so he loudly exclaimed where the after party was. So then they were at the after party, and then, of course, I got a bit drunk and went over and talked to them, and then I ended up staying with them for 2 weeks. Just this stranger who came to my show, and she was like, I got a spare room if you need it, and I was like, yeah, I do.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a nomadic as fuck lifestyle.
Yeah, like, I just did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you like...
There's a few of us. There's a few people, like... who do that sort of thing.
Yeah, because like you meet up at the specific points, but then you just chill. You're like, yeah. You're just going to go.
And I make sure I'm a really good house guest.
Yeah.
You know, you do the dishes, you clean, you be a good,
be polite,
be a good guest.
Yeah.
make them happy that you're there, and then they'll have you for the rest of time, you know?
That's true.
Every
That's
time it. You're back. Or you'd be like, do you know anyone else? And they'll set you up with someone. Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's part of the whole performer lifestyle, right?
Yeah, yeah. Marcus Ryan was another one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These are all
through Spain, yeah. I mean, South America, Central America.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but your base of operation was New York?
No, I was planning to move to Vancouver.
Okay.
Vancouver, Canada.
So the off-Broadway thing was just for a little bit?
Yeah, and then... yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, like, so you just had no base, you were just kind of just floating.
I've just been floating for the last 9 years.
That is wild.
Yeah.
Like, which how long are we talking between, like, average length of time staying places?
Usually the longest would be like a month, probably.
Fuck.
Stay somewhere for a month and then go somewhere else and stay there for however long. Yeah. I usually go where the gigs are. So if someone, if there's a, because I've done now, I've probably done like 80 festivals around the world, maybe even more. So I look up a festival, write to the people who run it.
Yeah,
do you want me to do this thing?
You slot sure. in 2 seconds, yeah.
Do you have a friend who can put me up? Yeah, okay, I'll do it.
Wow.
I did it around Central America as well. Just traveled around Central America.
Just doing gigs and...
Doing charity gigs. So there's lots of like not-for-profits and stuff. And
so all in English, but...
Yeah, which are mainly expats.
Yeah, expats.
Let's be honest. Southeast Asia, the same.
Yeah.
And you just... If it's a not-for-profit... And it's whatever, or, you know, a charity or something like that. And I'll just say, like, if you put me up, I'll, you know, we'll sell tickets and, you know, I'll give half to you and I'll keep half. And the money thing doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just like, because you're just enjoying what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I stayed on an island in Belize for like 4 weeks and just did a couple of shows And I just said to them as well, like, if I make my way there, I'll do some shows. Can you give me free accommodation? Done. Lived
not
above a pub on the beach in Belize.
It's not bad.
Yep. And then I did the show for charity. And then this guy came up to me and he was talking. And then, you know, we bought drinks and all that. And he donated a lot of money. And then someone was like, his dad owns half of this island. Mm. And then he was like, where are you staying? I was like, I'm just staying above the pub here. And he was like, well, look, I own the resort. You can just live in one of the rooms for a week if you want, so you can feel like a normal person again. And I got this like 4-bedroom suite.
That's hilarious.
There was a slide out the front that goes into the ocean and stayed in this beautiful thing. And this guy and his wife lived in the room next door and made me dinner and breakfast and
oh wow,
just hung out with them. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
It's opportunistic, just... But then I felt really bad because the pub was like a backpacker's. So I went back to the pub and then I was this weird, creepy guy who was like, look, I've got a room in this. There's 4 beds. Just come and I did to the backpackers what these people did for me. Like, you can come and say, I won't bother you.
Yeah.
Just come and hang out. You might as well.
Yeah.
It's free.
The three free beds.
Yeah.
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 So it sounds like you, like, I guess, introvert versus extrovert, that sort of thing. But it sounds like you like people. You like socializing and always being busy and surrounded by...
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. So if I'm left by myself, I won't do anything. I won't go anywhere. Yeah. I think one time I was house-sitting in Houston and I didn't talk to a person for like 2 weeks. Not another person. I didn't. And then when I finally talked to someone, my voice was really weird and different. Because I hadn't spoken to a human.
Well, I don't get. What do you mean? So, like, as in, if there's no one around, you just go into a bubble and...
I go into a bubble and it starts as, like, sort of comfortable and then goes into depression.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you actively try to be like, I don't think I want to do that.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to force to go in another direction. Yeah.
Yeah. So, COVID has been hard, you know? The amount of people who wrote to me when this first happened. And, I didn't think it was that big a deal. The amount of people who wrote to me and were like, how are you doing? And then they're like, you were the first person we thought of when this all went down. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've only just realized recently that, this has been a fucking
hard,
tough thing for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's been tough on everyone.
But yeah, but for you specifically.
My whole lifestyle's gone.
Your whole thing, if you've like gone to new places, you're like meeting new people, you're like doing new things, and it's all out the window completely.
Yeah, yeah.
And on top of that, opportunities and stuff, which obviously had lined up. Now you've got to wait a year and hope it's still all solidly there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird.
You had your own private little dystopia.
Yeah, I really did. I really did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Maybe I won't read these books anymore. Maybe that's where I've gone wrong.
Yeah, you're getting traumatized back to it.
Yeah. It was it. Well, we've all lived in a sort of dystopia sort of thing, right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
The sort of lining up to go into supermarkets. I remember when that was I was in America when that was happening.
Mm.
And I was like, this is it. This is the end of days. You know?
It was freaky when the first time everything happened in Melbourne and all the supermarkets got cleaned out of absolutely everything.
Yeah.
It was so interesting. You go in there and like, what I found is I was like, I would love to like go around and catalog just out of curiosity, what are the things people get? So like the ones that obviously you need to think of, like nappies.
Yeah.
So, and like vitamins were all gone. Everything's cleared out completely of every vitamin.
Oh, people are the worst.
And then specific kinds of tea and stuff like that. You see the ones that you're like, when the chips are down, which is the one everyone's going to get.
Yeah. Well, all the booze, right?
No, yeah, that's, yeah.
So much. I remember in Adelaide where they were shutting down for 6 days and they were going to shut down the bottle shops and people lost their minds. like lineups of cars to go through the bottle shops. Just like because it was
6 days
closing down at midnight that night.
Yeah.
And even I was staying with my friend and I went into a house and she's like, don't worry. And like showed me boxes of wine, like just all in her cupboards and stuff. She's like, don't worry, I got tons. And she's like, I don't think it's going to last. And then our lockdown went for 3 days
it's
and
so
she's got all this.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, right? That is also the thing is like, I like individual people, but people en masse do my brain in.
Right.
Like the mob mentality and the buying of toilet paper and stuff. I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's wrong with people? And now, like, you feel guilty buying any kind of toilet paper. Like, even when you buy toilet, just one little packet. It's like, it's for me. I need it. I do need it, actually.
You're the only one that's feeling guilty about that.
Exactly, right? Right?
No one else is going through
that. Coming back to the same thing.
You got a lot of stuff to unpack there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I always ask this from every interview, I guess. Do you feel like you've found any new connections between yourself and Why the Last Man from our conversation or just thinking about it?
Oh, yeah. Look, it's made me extremely introspective as to why I'm obsessed with this stuff. I love this sort of thing, like psychological or, you know, how we're affected and conditioned by stuff. So why do I like dystopian futures? Is because I think for me they're fantastical, but now they're a bit more real. So I'm, maybe less inclined to follow that. Oh, I think we're all doing that anyway. We're all watching Seinfeld repeats and no one wants any sort of challenging thing anymore, which was also tough doing the show where I'm quite mean to men. And they're like, oh, don't lecture us now.
Yeah, just give us it. It's like, we know.
There's a reason like Adelaide Fringe, any of the like challenging shows were like, they did fine, but then you'll go to like Best of This and it's just packed with people. Yeah.
Just fart jokes for an hour. Everyone's like, this is all
we want. That's all we want. Pretending things are a cock. So yeah, on every single show. Yeah. Every single one.
Yeah, look, it works.
I know.
Oh, it's hilarious. All right. Well, cool. I guess that ties up there. Is anything if anyone wants to follow you anywhere, how can they do that?
Should
they do
that? You can follow Pretending Things Are a Cock on Instagram and Facebook, and John Bennett, John without an H, pronounced faster than John with an H. John Bennett, BENNETT on all the things.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that.
And my YouTube's got all my stuff on it. My website, John Bennett Comedy.
Oh, no.
Has all videos and all the stuff on it.
I actually want to watch some of that because I haven't seen your older stuff, so I'm very interested, actually.
Yeah, people like The Fire in the Myth Lab and My Dad's Death's the best, so I would start there.
Fire, okay.
Pretending Things Are a Cock, I mean, sure. Do it if you want.
You just, I hate these people.
Yeah,
I want no one to watch it anymore.
Yeah.
You're getting your own Chopper moment.
Yeah, no, that's my Chopper, except even Chopper is far more successful than I am. Thanks, nice. Heath.
It's hilarious. All right. Well, that's it. So, thanks very much for being on.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.